it's not only that we are complementary, that we are going to in different at a different speed and really help each other, because when I need that you go faster or slower, probably you are already running that fast or that slow. It's interesting. It's just like there is a sort of synchronicity between us, not coordinated, but most of the time it's going like that.
You know, those two personalities are perfect matches. Those are like official matches for personality types. Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, or send a few sats from link in the description. Today, we're welcoming two guests, another Bitcoin couple with us on Live with Bitcoin. We have Mir Liponi and Giacomo Zucco. Mir and Giacomo are both Bitcoin OGs who've been actively building in Bitcoin for more than a decade. Mir, the godmother of Italian's Bitcoin community, is a driving force behind community building effort in Italy and abroad, curating events and platforms that bridge technical and cultural discussions. And Giacomo, a physicist turned entrepreneur and a well-known thought leader in the Bitcoin space, director of Plan B Network, an initiative to integrate the best Bitcoin educational content and physical spaces around the world to help people regain their sovereignty. Thank you for joining us.
Wow, those descriptions were pretty perfect. I never heard such a pretty and
Not up to date or more
super confusing. Update. We are going to reuse that.
So over the past 2 years, I've met you both a few times at different places in the world at Bitcoin events, especially this time in Prague. If I'm honest, there was this love in the air between the two of you. I remember this particular moment when we were at the Rocket Model in Prague, and then we're at the backstage, and there was a few people there, and then you two were sitting there having a conversation. And if I'm honest, there was love in the air. And it was just so shiny that I was feeling shy for just watching the two of you exchanging eye contact. Like, I'm not even kidding. I got shy just watching you exchange eye contact. I feel like I should be giving your some space. And it was so intense. But I was so moved by this energy around the two of you as a couple, as builders in Bitcoin. And Mir, were you the one who orange-pilled Giacomo?
I love to say so, but actually Giacomo was the first one arriving to Bitcoin. But in a way, I can say that without me, Giacomo wouldn't be that involved in and so early in Bitcoin, because he started probably 2012, around that.
December 2012, got my first byte from some Bitcoin information scattered around. But I was obsessed about that intellectually, but I was not going to make it a job until she convinced me to do it. She didn't take long, but she was the one basically saying that my life back then was fragmented. I was doing political activism in libertarian sense, but that was just throwing away money and time with no result and no construction. I was following technology, but it was boring, all the fiat payment technology, nothing exciting. And I was also trying to make more money, to make investment based on my take on the economic situation, but not very successful. So she said, basically, the three things you're trying to do, that's just Bitcoin. Do something about that. And I really listened to her.
Yeah, well, it was just a sentence that makes completely sense to me. I wasn't ready that you were about to quit your job and start a full-time job in Bitcoin.
Next day, she told me after dinner, she said, you're talking about Bitcoin all the time and you're doing a job you don't like, activism you don't like, and you suck at investments.
So, well, just not like that, but
so just do Bitcoin. And then the next day I say, okay, if she's fine with that, I basically quit my consultancy job in Accenture.
Well, coming back to home every day, just like Job sucks. I don't like it. It was hard. It was tough to see you like that every day. And I wanted to find a solution. And to me, Bitcoin was just perfect. I wasn't that involved, but I at least I understood the some sort of basics, the fields involved in Bitcoin. And it seems clear to me, okay, Giacomo, those are exactly the things you are interested into, and finally they are all together, and maybe you can get some money somewhere in some way. And yeah, you took my advice verbatim.
And then I rearranged Pillar Hair inadvertently,
yeah,
because years later, this was May 2013,
yeah,
I quit my job, I did Bitcoin stuff, she was doing the PhD, and then she came to New York to do some musicology things because she's a musicologist at the Met. I was following consensus conference, scam conference. And then we had a dinner with like Adam Beck, Nicola Bacca, a few OGs. And okay, I said, just come over, Elizabeth Starr, just come over because, I mean, for logistical reasons, it was just more practical to have dinner together. And then she was completely overwhelmed by the personal histories and personal figures.
Though. Well, I like theories in general. My favorite book in life is the Book of Theories, but I don't know why with Bitcoin, what really made me change my mind was meeting people working in Bitcoin. And it was clear to me at that point that was something like history in the making, seeing them, their passion, their work, what they were discussing. Of course, I didn't understand a single word. Still, I don't, but I was really fascinated, and my feeling was just like, okay, I want to be part of it. I don't know how. I want to help those people in some way, because this is something that doesn't happen every day. And so basically that was my time to say, probably I should quit what I'm doing. So yes, I didn't finish my PhD because of Bitcoin. But I don't regret it.
People want to get a Bitcoin job now. And it's even hard, even at 2024. That's this year, right? Even at 2024, it's somewhat difficult to get a Bitcoin job. What were some of the jobs available in Bitcoin in 2013? Like,
No roles.
No employed roles, just startup. So yeah. I quit my job with intention to become a startupper. So I co-founded basically seven different startups over the year. Most of them were total bullshit. And I joined some already funded startup. The lucky ones has been early 2013. Well, late 2013, I joined Lawrence Naum with Green Address, the wallet, which is now Blockstream Green. And that was lucky. But then I co-founded any kind of bullshit, like one company to track wine on the blockchain, because of course, one company to issue tokens for like Kickstarter, but with tokens. So any kind of shitcoin idea you can think about, I did that in 2013. And then over the time, I noticed that everything was failing. Not just the shitcoin ideas, also the legit things like Green Address. We didn't have any business model. So as a side hustle, just to keep bringing some money home, I started to consult fiat entities like banks. So I was coming from consultancy, so I was good at speaking and making stuff up. I was exposed to real Bitcoiners, and so I could get a lot of first-hand information. So my job was taking information from the real technical guys, shaping it in a way that was digestible from clients, and reselling it. So after a few months in 2014, I said, okay, my job is basically pretending I'm a Bitcoin startupper, but losing money there, basically throwing away my own money, our own money, just to keep startups alive. And then on the other side, I was getting paid pretty well by big Italian banks, like big institutions, to tell them more about Bitcoin in a language they could understand. And with some kind of contrarian vision, because I was not going to sell, in this case, I was not going to sell the blockchain snake oil. I was being quite skeptical. I was trying to be precise, also because the people I met, like Lawrence, they were teaching me, like Lawrence Naum took me in late 2013 as a shitcoiner and turned me into a maximalist in three horrible days of insulting me. So now I was like prepared. And so basically what I did in 2014 was just make that the business model. If that's how things work, then I will make money out of consultancy about Bitcoin from banks and stuff like that. I will take the money, spending it to basically provide a lifeline to Bitcoin developers. So the idea was Bitcoin developers come here, sort of an incubator if you wish, but it was not an exchange of shares. You come here, I keep your company alive, I give you an office, travel, food, accommodation, and in exchange, we hire people to help you. In exchange, we only want first-hand, honest information. Then we extract it, we package it, and we sell it as consultancy. And I started that alone, but then after that famous dinner, she said, okay, I have to be there. And she became the cornerstone of the consulting company, mostly because people started to trust her and not me for legit reasons. And so she was the real reference point of all these developers coming from all over the world. They were, I was spending my day in meetings, signing paperwork, boring stuff or speeches. I was never sitting down with where the fun was happening. She took basically control of the real office and she started to make that office alive. Yeah.
One of the struggle was to describe our, not only the business model, but also the job titles, the job role. What are you doing? I'm doing everything. I am in every process, but I'm not a CEO. I'm taking care of the human side, but I am not HR. I'm not properly doing research. So it was almost impossible. So I guess it's still the same in the Bitcoin space. So Bitcoin changes also the business model. We have to reinvent and to understand better what is going on with new incentives and also the job roles. So it's still difficult to apply for a job and also to have a title, just like what I am doing. But it's pretty clear between Bitcoiners, but it's difficult to find a match between I want this type of person and I'm looking for this type of person and those are my skills. Still, we are very early in that. So I guess one of the reasons why it's still so difficult is because of that.
In a way, what we're doing now with Plan B Network, part of the initiative, the Plan B schools, we're trying to solve some of that problem or mitigate that problem. Basically, we are at the point now, unlike 2013, in which some Bitcoin companies are big enough to have normal employees, like actual employees, not just co-founders. And so they want employees. And now they face a dilemma. For example, you need marketing because you really need marketing for your product. You can take a very specialized, well-trained, experienced marketing guy who knows nothing about Bitcoin, completely clueless about the culture, the memes, the ethos, the objectives. Or you can take a Bitcoiner. He's a great guy, very focused, very very passionate, but he's not an experienced marketing guy. He's just making it up as he goes. Bitcoiners tend to be very with a lot of different interests. They're not hyper specialized often. They have very, very many interests. So what do you do? So what we are trying to do with the Bitcoin, with the Plan B Business School and Tech School is we take people with a very specific skill set. So a developer who's already a great developer, a great UX front-end developer, a great back-end developer, or a marketing guy, or a legal tax lawyer or whatever, or an accountant. We take somebody with a set of hard skills and we orange peel them in order to teach them the ethos, the memes, the culture, the do and don't of Bitcoin, so that companies that work with us, so the Fulgur family with all the portfolio, the Tether family, they can just pick not from normies or inexperienced Bitcoiners, but they can try to have the best of both worlds. And so far, we just did it once, but we're happy with the result.
Yeah. Wow! So it's almost like a cultural preschool for aspiring Bitcoin professionals.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were doing consultancy, was working with banks and working with, legacy institutions, doing consultancy work with them, and then feeding those resources into building on Bitcoin. I wonder what was the thought process like emotionally for you? Because I've heard arguments where people identify, like, I believe there are different type of people in this world, and then they approach things in different ways. We have the gamers where they can be gamers where they really learn how to play the game, and then they play it so well to the point that they can finally break the game. And we've seen Bitcoiners who are like that. And then we also have dreamers who are like, banks are shit, I don't want to work with them at all, I'm gonna live strictly on Bitcoin standard, even this means I'm gonna get myself into a heck of a trouble, but I want to maintain, I want to be pure. Like, I want to be purely on Bitcoin, and I don't want to work with banks at all. How were you navigating between having to work with legacy institutions and rationalize that process? And where do you sit? Are you part of the group that believe don't hate the player, hate the game? Or you're the part of the group that believes that in order to not play the game, we need to excel at the game so that we digital together?
Well, I was in a very strange place back then, because you're talking about purity and ideology, but I was coming from my first job after my physics degree. Consultant at Accenture, technology consultant, was so impure in this sense that any improvement in this direction was more than acceptable to me. So I was spending all my day to sell literal bullshit with no use for anybody in the world. And I switched to tell what I was convinced was the truth about something revolutionary. So even if I was meeting with some boring people, with a lot of the environment was not as exciting as some of the Bitcoin environments I can hang out with now. Back then, I had to take to basically accept a lot of compromises. I have to bite my tongue a little bit. But basically, for me, it was a huge step up in the direction of being something. I could talk about cypherpunk ideas at my work. That was not possible in Accenture. Even if I had to sell it nicely to bankers, I was still saying the truth about privacy, about crypto anarchism. I was framing that as, you know, there are these guys thinking these ideas. I will just have to tell you these ideas because they are important for Bitcoin technology understanding. But I was able to talk about that. Before, I was coming from a completely fake fiat environment. So it was an improvement. On the other hand, in order to vent, I was doing completely hopeless and naive activism, and now was moving into something that on the other side of the spectrum was feeling more and more pragmatic and effective. And like, instead of just waving libertarian flags, I was helping the tool that could change things.
So overall, it was a net positive. Amir, you've shared some pictures of your early days together. I remember saw a few of those. Were you and Giacomo high school sweethearts?
Actually, we met when we were, I mean, not toddlers, but just preschoolers. Yes, that's the term. And so we still have some picture of us at the same music course together. And recently, since we moved to Switzerland, we got to rearrange all our stuff. We found a certificate from that course school together.
Music course
together. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it was in 1990, something like that. It's crazy. And we want to put a frame somewhere of that. So it has been such a long time that.
But we did a remaining contact. So we met in this occasion very, very early when we were small kids. Then we didn't talk to each other for many, many years. And then we met again during high school years.
Yeah.
Also, because you see, there is a problem. There is also a movie footage of a birthday party of a friend. And we are both there.
Your cousin.
My cousin, yeah. Right. And we are both there, probably 5 years old, 4 years old. The problem is that she was basically as tall as now, and I was basically 30 centimeters. So you could see in the footage that I was trying to dance around her, but I was too small. So she could not see me. She was just too big for me.
I was a very, very tall kid and was younger than Giacomo, probably double his size in height. And so it's so funny. We watched this video our parents found somewhere, and there was just basically Giacomo dancing around me and me
I
just
was trying to hit on her, but she could not even see me.
So he tried to hit on me very early, but I didn't notice. It's a very sad story of us. Yeah. So
then I gave up for a few years, and then when I was 17, I
tried. Yeah, we finally had the same
the same height.
So I could see you, and finally we met 2001. Yeah.
Wow, kudos to Giacomo, having the girl that you were hitting on at 5 years old. That doesn't happen to everyone.
Yeah, commitment. No, to be honest, I didn't, when we met again, I didn't even remember about this music course or this party. Maybe I removed it from my brain because of the suffering,
so
of the
traumatic
rejection.
What are your personality types, two of you?
Oh, mine is INTJ.
Ah, and Giacomo?
Of course, Giacomo is ENTP. Absolutely, is perfectly ENTP.
Do you know those two personalities are perfect matches? Those are like official matches for personality types.
So she said to me like two days ago,
yeah,
that we have the cognitive function exactly complementary to each other.
No, well, yeah, those are in the same position, but opposite, which is really interesting because it means that we are basically pondering our priorities and our way to explore life very in the same way, but in a complementary way. So, for example, where I have our first function is intuition. My is introvert intuition. He is extrovert intuition. The second one for me is extroverted thinking. He is introverted thinking. And once again, so it's really interesting because we get each other, but at the same time, there is always something we couldn't thought about before. So it's really stimulating even after a year. Just like another thing that we noticed recently is just like I'm good at creating stuff out of nothing randomly, and he is more like perfectioning my stuff. But he was telling me I couldn't figure out without you. But now that I see that,
I could not create anything because I get blocked by perfection. I cannot create. But if I see, so if she creates a scheme, she can get it done because she will make a judgment call to actually draw something. Then I can spend hours to perfect it, to review the symmetries, to move things around until it's completely satisfying. But if I start from a blank page, I'm completely unable to put something on the page. She is able to actually make a judgment call, and then I can obsess over over theoretical stuff,
which is very useful for work and other things because I start the process and you can do everything to make it better.
Which doesn't mean that I am the rigorous one and
no,
she is the...
No, not so.
Because like in life, we are the opposite. Yeah. In airport, she would arrive 3 hours before. I would arrive basically to lose every single plane. I will always arrive late.
Well, that's because JMP, I am I'm very judging person. So I tend to do everything in advance. And you are very...
I improvise. Like if I have to do a talk, I will do it the same night. Usually if I come to a panel, she will study the content of the panel for months. I will just
half a month, but,
well, maybe for weeks. I will ask what's the panel about during the panel mostly.
Yeah.
I like to improvise.
I've also heard stories where you changed the entire scheme and throw out your slide maybe hours before the presentation and restart a new thing. I've heard stories like that before. So I get a sense of how it is like personality-wise. If we are, when it comes to choosing a life partner, do you think it's better to find someone who are different?
So I have my own theory, and it's basically you want the same core. You want to share principle, ethics, and the same, in a way, the same direction with the other person. But actually for interest or for habits, you want a sort of a mix between something similar, something very different to be more complementary. Sometimes we argue, but most of the time it's just like we compensate each other. So we basically, we get on the plane on perfect timing because I want to come early. earlier. Yeah. And
as an average,
we are
one functional individual on average.
And that's great because we accept the other and the compromise is just perfect. So for some things really works, but I couldn't imagine being too different in other things. Because, I mean, if the vision of the world is completely the opposite, if you're going to stay together for decades, this is not going to work. It's too much.
So we agree on these. The answer is, in a way, paradoxically, both. You need to have a convergence of objectives and interests enough to work together and to live together, but also a distance enough to complement each other, and not just be redundant or even be. I guess that staying with me, I'm already in my head. Staying with somebody like me all the time would be very boring for me. I guess the same.
I don't know. I stay very well by myself. But I was also thinking that was just an example of what we were discussing before. I just create my theory. It was very raw. And then you come after me and then use the exact the perfect words. And it sounded like an incredible theory. But it was coming from me before. But you use the perfect convergence and whatever. I'm so jealous. Yeah, I was so jealous. I mean, just like, oh my God, why I didn't think about those terms? Because I was formulating before you. And so that's basically what we do all the time. I create and he takes the credits.
Interesting. So my next question is this. When you are facing differences in personalities or approach to approach practical problems as a family unit or as a team, of course, there's going to be sometimes disagreements or sometimes different opinions. I can't imagine you agree on 100% of the things. So what is a typical approach you take? Do you always try to meet somewhere in the middle, or you adapt more of a specialization of labor sort of thing? If someone feels super strongly about something more so than other, then you take care of it, or you always try to incorporate both viewpoint and try to meet in the middle?
We are both T types. So actually, we're kind of rational. And so it has kind of easy to discuss because we feel that we are very, very rational and we tend to rationalize things. And so we didn't argue a lot in the past. But I have to say that recently we discovered that we are also people with emotions and we handle those emotions very differently, and it's hard to communicate those emotions. So at the moment, we are working so much on expressing better our needs for that. And the funny thing is, of course, we argue more than in the past, but also we understand each other more. So it's not a facade of, okay, we are meeting each other perfectly because we are that rational. But we are now, I think it's hard and complex because we tend to, in comparison to the past, we tend to, share more and stay more on arguments and discussing more, but the results are completely different. And I think it's a good place to stay right now because we are finally compromised with everything on the table. So it's very, I cannot say too much because it's kind of new to us this, but I see that it's working pretty well. It was about time after 20 years.
Well, since my job is just to plagiarize you with changing the words, I agree. On superficial stuff, stuff that is shallow, not important, we agree always perfectly, basically. We are probably one of the couple that we know of with less discussion because we just put data on the table, we calculate. That's like Leibniz was saying, let's not argue, let's sit down and calculate. On shallow stuff. On deep stuff, though, we have a different way to express emotions and manage emotion. Mostly, she's kind of functional with emotions. I'm not really. So when we have to go to deep stuff, that's harder, and probably that's where we have where the differences require more effort to compromise, and not just the compromise doesn't emerge spontaneously after a few calculations. You really have to make efforts.
You've been together for decades, for more than 20 years. And how do you feel like you've changed, if you like your partner has changed, and as partners, how do we support each other for their personal growth while focusing on our own development at the same time?
You started this time.
So she mostly changed by becoming more. So when we met, I was in many ways, not all, but in many ways, I was very sure of myself, very confident and a little bit like pretentious and obnoxious and arrogant. I was a dick. And I was very, probably borderline rude.
Not borderline.
Rude, totally uncompromising, very autistic, no emotion expression at all, and extreme, more extreme than I am now, conflictual. So she helped me to smooth down my character a bit. She, on the other hand, she did the opposite path in a way. She was very kind, but a little bit maybe too kind, like allowing others to always take the control seat. She was very humble, maybe too humble, a little bit insecure. She became very, very secure, very, very confident. She became harder, and I became softer, basically, as a general trend, I think.
I tend to agree. I feel that I've changed a lot, probably more than you.
Yeah,
I feel that during these years, because I really put a lot of work and effort in trying to. Well, it's a very strong commitment for me to overcome some things that I don't like, and some things I want to fix, or things that I want to improve. So I'm really focused on that, and also because I'm very curious, so I want to explore different stuff. So I'm very lazy physically, but mentally I am very, very energetic. So it's Giacomo, but probably in some way I am even more. And since you were coming from a place where you explored many things before me, and you were more confident, I guess you did less work, and you changed less than me during those years. But I think that this is very unpredictable, because, for example, we are in the last month. I think you're deciding to change something for yourself, and so you are improving so much and so fast that you are
But I think that's covering. It's consistent with your description, because basically I started from a very self-confidence place, except for some maybe hidden insecurities, but I was at least superficially very confident. So it means that I was thinking about myself as perfect. So I had no reason to change. I stayed the same for a very long time. And only recently, I'm learning that I'm not perfect. So I'm actually changing a lot. While she was the other way around. At the beginning, she was always working to improve herself in any possible way, never satisfied, changing continuously. While now you're basically stabilizing it a bit more. You're basically keeping some things more. You're not stopping your evolution.
I'm more, I guess, more grounded. I don't know. It's a good term to say that, and I feel that I have more stability. It's not only that we are complementary, that we are going to in different at a different speed and really help each other, because when I need that you go faster or slower, probably you are already running that fast or that slow. It's interesting. It's just like there is a sort of synchronicity between us. Not coordinated, but most of the time it's going like that.
And how has being involved in Bitcoin together shaped your relationship over the years? And if Bitcoin was not in the picture, if Bitcoin didn't exist, what your life would look like right now, if you have to imagine?
So in a way, this links with the previous question about evolution and changing. For me, in a way, Bitcoin, it did change my life, but it improved my life so much from the point of view of personal satisfaction in my job, respect from the peers and financial situation at home, because we were struggling when we got married. We had nothing from our parents, so we were struggling, and then we were better. So for me, the situation improved so much that I think that at the beginning, I stopped evolving even more. So I think that Bitcoin put me in a place of even more complacency and arrogance, at least at the beginning. While for her, especially after this New York dinner, when she was basically thrown into a context that was completely different. So for me, technology, payment technology, libertarian activism was already my stuff. Bitcoin was just a unifier. For Mir, it was leaving everything she knew in order to throw herself completely in something completely new.
So I was in a place where I was specializing more and more, which doesn't work for me at all. But I wanted to put everything I had to try that path. And so when I met Bitcoin, it was super liberating. And one of the problem with doing something so specializing was also that it was impacting our relationship, because I was really, really, really focused on the PhD and doing my music career. And Giacomo was out of all these things. And so we were kind of living two different lives. So for us, Bitcoin was just like, oh, we're starting doing things again together. So I didn't do for that. I was fascinated by Bitcoin, but actually one of the best results has been that we were close again together. And so it really helped us even as a couple,
yeah,
especially at the beginning. So it was amazing as an effect for us, because we worked together. I think there, I don't know about other couples, many people say that they don't want to work together because they tend to argue more and they prefer to do different jobs and then coming back at home during the weekends together. For us, it's just like the more time that we spend together, the more we are happy and the more we understand each other. When we tend to stay far apart, we tend to go even further. And so it was just like reconnecting, and it was a convergence for us, very important in our history.
Yeah, in the university years, even if I was studying physics, she was studying musicology, we were together all the time, and I was giving her exam and she was taking my notes. So since during the physics lectures, I was falling asleep because I didn't sleep at night. Yeah. So she took all the notes about quantum mechanics. She couldn't read, but she was very accurate in keeping all the notes, so I could study on her notes. Yeah. And I was coming to her lecture, and I gave a few exams of
just linguistics,
because I mean, it was a relief from physics a little bit. So even if we were doing different stuff, we were very, very together. Not just Bitcoin itself, but when she came to work for BHB Network and we started to work together 24/7, that did reconnect us a lot.
I've heard people advocate for both sides of the equation of how couples should not work together in the same job or work together for professional capacities. And then I've also seen people who really thrive working as a couple, and then that really strengthens their relationship. And then you two seem like the perfect match, where your personality and then the way you think and how you function really complement each other. So it clearly worked out for you. So here's my question. What do you think, if a couple were to work together and to achieve good results for either the professional project or their personal relationship, what are some of the prerequisites do you think can set them up for success if they were to work together as a couple?
There are some couples that survive because they don't share too much. They survive because they keep some distance, because maybe they have some surface compatibility. But if you go too deep, that basically becomes incompatibility. In that case, assuming one wants to keep that relationship, which is also fine, because sometimes in life, not everything is super deep and always super anti-fragile. Some things can be kept together just because they work well enough. Then in that case, so if a couple tends to argue all the time, maybe less time together is better. Also, there is a strong problem with roles and hierarchy and a lot of competition. That could be a problem. Like, for example, in our situation, I don't, maybe you disagree, but my perception of the story is I'm not very competitive. I ended up being the CEO of the company just because somebody had to do it. I didn't care very much to be the CEO. I have fun to talk. I am extrovert and I am I'm talkative, but I'm not really in any rush to be the first. So I didn't have to express a lot of competitivity. While Mir came to an environment where I was already the founder, so she didn't have to race. I can see that in other situations, maybe if you have some balance at home, and then the balance at work is completely swapped, that can create some kind of conflict. So in work, division of labor is never perfectly symmetrical. There is somebody who has more responsibility, maybe a higher pay, and that can create a problem, because if the couple is very equal at home and then at work, that balance is broken, that can have some repercussion, I guess.
Our job is so beautiful, and it's basically we could have done that even in our free time. So it doesn't feel...
Don't say that our clients will stop paying.
No, well, but it's true. It's just like, it's beautiful. It's just like we are living in our quality time, and it's just like a couple thing, even if it's work. So yeah, it really depends. Right. If it's your passion, you're both doing the things that you love. It doesn't feel like a strong effort. It just like feels just like we are always on weekends going, and it is like that, traveling. It's so I think it depends on the couple, because we experienced that in the past too. So we were very compatible, and we love to sit together. Yeah. But also the job is it's really important.
How did the volatility of Bitcoin's market cycle impact your personal lives in any way? Because you both have been working in Bitcoin for a long time, and then there's a really clear seasonality of the Bitcoin market cycle. And as a family, you obviously need to plan ahead finance-wise, and then you have you have children to raise, and then you need to support yourself. So if both of the parents are working in Bitcoin, how do they? What are some of the tips that you've identified to help navigate through that seasonality?
Kind of extreme, but I consider Bitcoin like zero. So I try to do. I like that we do different things completely to survive on other things, and being in the mindset that that part in a way doesn't exist except for emergency, except for big projects or whatever. And so I'm not, I mean, I don't care about volatility. It's still zero, but I still have something in case of emergency. So I feel safe, but at the same time, I don't, it helps us to hold and to be ready for any scenario. I mean, at the beginning, it was a giant bet for us. We basically put everything we owned in Bitcoin, and we owned basically 2,000 euros or so. It was everything we owned at that time. And except for the time where we have been very, again, I mean, very cautious with everything. But at the time, it was just a bet. It is easier when you don't own anything. And so it's just like, okay, if something happens, I still own nothing.
You'll own nothing
and be happy. We tried that scenario. So, and from that moment on, was just like, okay, I used to have 2,000 euros, now I have zero. And I tend to think, of course, I'm not completely and fully convinced of that, but I tend to take the majority of the choices of our life, trying to be reliant of different other sources, just because I feel it's safer and reasonable.
So. Yeah, basically, when I started working Bitcoin, we started with zero from our parents, and I had made some money before the wedding. We kept living on the cash flow, never on the savings. So we don't spend savings. So if we need something, we work, we earn, we spend. So volatility really never, we never lived in a bear market or a bull market. If we want to spend more, we just work more.
Being Italian, knowing what you know about Italians and have traveled around the world meeting Bitcoiners from practically everywhere from the world, what's unique about Italians in the world of Bitcoin? And do you think there's some cultural traits that make them easier or harder to orange pill?
I think that typical Italians tend to be statistically strange. Like you have more people that are below average in some field, and then a few special cases that are way, basically way above average. That happens not just in Bitcoin, but
so
in every
many
field.
Outliers.
Many outliers. Like in the Italy is bad for adoption, orange pilling, general understanding. Italian culture is not very friendly for Bitcoin in general. But it generated an impressive, unlikely number of Bitcoin entrepreneurs and experts. And I mean, we're thinking first grade, world class people in a relatively small country with a very anti-Bitcoin general sentiment. Like you have the creator of Green Address, I was mentioning before, Lawrence is Italian. That was the first multi-sig wallet with P2SH, the first hierarchical deterministic wallet. We had Riccardo Casatta, the Vaccaro's brother, Luca Venturini, a lot of amazing people that are doing amazing stuff, Alecos, Pirini. All these Italian people are very often champions in their league. But the general sentiment is very dismissive of Bitcoin, very ignorant about Bitcoin.
Incredible. And one thing that you didn't tell before is the fact that they were also very early.
Very early, very early.
Very early. Right. So it was probably along with Prague, of course, and along with some
Czech
parts
community.
Of... Yeah, some part,
some part of French.
French. Italians were the first community for Bitcoin in the world, and so we established our Bitcoin meetup very early, and it reached a strong number already in 2015 and 16, and so very proud of Italy for Bitcoin.
Italians tend to be a little bit less organized, a little bit more conflictual. There is a lot of drama in the Italian community. Everybody's fighting. That happens everywhere, but with Italians, that's particularly
strong.
You can
imagine.
So there are some negatives in the cultural traits, but the production of champions, the production of outliers is incredible. And also, I'm very proud. I don't really believe in the existence of Italy. It's like an artifact. But I'm very proud to be Italian when you see how Italians are completely immune to political correctness. So like U.S. people, they may have gone through this kind of woke moment, and now there may be a rejection, a pendulum swinging on the other way with some kind of rejection of the idea, Elon Musk trying to fight against the woke virus, okay. But Italians, they are completely immune to even the temptation to be politically correct. That just doesn't compute. So and that's a typical Italian trait. Like if you cannot say something because that's suddenly impolite, Italians will always say that. And they are partially justified because, we're Italian, we can.
So next time if I come across an Italian, I want to orange pill them without knowing Italian. Like what is something I can say that would work on Italian, you would say?
They love to get cheap things and things for free. So probably, no-brainer.
Investment.
I just give some sats.
Yeah, give them some sets. They are going to figure out. It pretty works so well with Italians. I mean, there are Italians that are scared, but the majority of people, they really love stuff for free. So yeah, probably do that with a pizza and it's not that difficult.
But also, we discussed generic Italian traits, but the reality is that Italy really doesn't exist.
So if you go
to the south of Italy, everybody will, if they don't know Bitcoin, everybody will just assume you're trying to scam them, which is also a very healthy assumption when you enter the crypto world. So in some part of the Italian culture, diffidence and skepticism are the prevalent trait. In North, you may find more, as Mir was saying, more statist rule dependent people that will ask, is this really legal? A little bit like German people or something like that. So it really depends where you are.
I love asking people speak different languages of what is a word in their language that they love, because there's always so many words in each language that are so eerily specific and have a very interesting meaning. And then oftentimes we can take a sneak peek of these words and understand, oh, these people in this culture, they care about this enough to coin a word for it. So what is a word that you like in Italian?
Eccentrico. It's a very nice word that we have in Italian, which means original, but in a different way. You are original and you're like an extrovert.
Quirky?
Oh, yeah, quirky. And but it's also, it sounds a little bit like eclectic, because it's like quirky, but eclectic.
Yeah, quirky and eclectic at the same time. It's a very nice word. I don't know why I thought about that, but yeah. I think that Bitcoiners definitely are eccentrici. I don't need how to say in Italian in plural, because usually it's only one person that is eccentrico or eccentrica. Not many people, of course. It's just something unusual, right?
Yeah. A very Italian trait is fake humility and fake servilism and fake kindness, but with a background of actual distance and a little bit of mockery. So it's interesting to know that ciao, the universal ciao that everybody is using, is coming from basically I'm your slave. So it's ciao vostro in Venetian. So it was I'm your slave, which if you imagine that from a typical Venetian person, it's not literal. There is some level of mockery into that. Like, yes, I'm your slave. Like, I'm like servo vostro. Maybe there is in other languages as well. The fact that the universal greeting, which is both hello and also goodbye, the same, is I'm your slave or your servant, basically. I think that's interesting.
Can you teach me how to say fix the money, fix the world in Italian?
You probably have to say, if you fix the money, then you fix the world.
Yeah.
So, se aggiusti il denaro, aggiusti il mondo.
Se aggiusti il denaro, aggiusti il mondo.
Very good.
Got it.
Thank you so much for taking the time. This has been super, super fun. How do our audience stay close to your work?
Oh, well, so probably on X, on Noster. And so, but I think, I mean, just like I'm Amir BTC and Giacomo Zucco and Pabar, too long to tell, but you will find us around. I think the most interesting thing that we are doing right now is for Plan B Network. You are the director. So if you follow and go to the website, you are going to
PlanB.network.
Yeah, PlanB.network. You are going to find so many resources about Bitcoin education. Everything in one place. And contribute. If you can contribute to that, help making even more than it already is. And I'm talking right now just like supporting the project. I have no official role.
But I should hire you because we have been...
Yet, probably, but it's just out of love from...
Now you know who the secret director is. I'm just just a face, and just a pretty face.
Once again, I do the stuff and you get the credits.
Any closing remarks you would like to share before we wrap up for the Live with Bitcoin audience?
Well, it's totally worth it, even if it sounds eccentrico or crazy. It's a very incredible path. You won't regret it. You will regret it.
Agree. I will not even change the word to make them sound nicer because they're already perfect. I totally agree.
This is another episode of Live with Bitcoin. I'm your host, Vivian, and we'll see you in the next episode.